Hey everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Jay Speak, and I'm coming to you from Sheremetyevo Airport, where posh place, by the way, it's gorgeous, and I'm going to be heading to Beijing, and it's going to be, in many ways, a transformational event that's going to be taking place, and I'm so glad that I'm going to be able to go there and bring it to you. First of all, China is going to be commemorating its anniversary of its victory over Japan. And this victory parade is supposed to be perhaps like none other that they've had in the past. So I'm looking forward to seeing that from a ceremonial standpoint. But now let's talk about this from a transformational standpoint. This is going to be a meeting between Mr. Putin, Mr. Xi, and Mr. Modi that I'm going to be covering. It's important because, in many ways, and I was just texting with my friend Colonel Douglas McGregor about this. In many ways, it's a meeting that has come about where strange bedfellows are coming together, and they were, in essence, brought together by the West, and more, specifically by our country, the United States of America. So I think what makes that so interesting is that the president of the United States, Donald Trump, is onto something like perhaps no other country or no other president, pardon me, is onto in the past. If you notice the way Mr. Trump has most recently, and I know there's ebbs and flows in this because there's ebbs and flows in everything that Mr. Trump does, but if you notice that he's kind of giving equal treatment to the NATO countries and the EU as he is the Global South. He is just as stern with the EU and the NATO countries as he is sometimes with the Global South. Now, you would expect an American president would be stern with the Global South. They always have. Russia's the enemy, China's the enemy, India's just a bunch of backward morons, and the Arab countries are all terrorists, blah, blah, blah. That's the way basically Americans are brought up to believe. That's what CNN tells you, and that's what the news tells you, and we all think that. And American presidents pretty much follow that principle. But along comes Donald Trump, and he's looking at it a little bit differently. So most people with half a brain in the world now realize that the consortium of Russia and China and India are coming together because of the strength of their GDP growth, because of the strength of their standing armies, because of the strength of their GDPs in general, and so many other things. They've become essentially economically more powerful and militarily as viable as the West. But here's the thing, and I'm about to play an interview for you where you're going to probably get a better understanding of this, because I'm going to introduce you to somebody named Xavier Moreau. It's French. And that's key to this interview, right? He's French. He's a paratrooper, smart guy. And I sit down with him to try and better understand what's going on right now between, in Europe. And the sense that we get is that not only after listening to him, you'll ask yourself, as I did when I was done with the interview, should Trump even go further? The idea that Trump should be should treat the Global South community the same as he treats NATO and EU, if you kind of look at the numbers alone, if you're a business person or if you're just good at looking at things from the standpoint of what matters, you come away with the impression that European countries, specifically, and that's what we're going to get from him. I wanted to know what's going on with France in particular, because there's a story out recently that Macron's in trouble. His people can't stand him. And not only that, now Italy's basically mocking him and accusing him as well. They're a neighboring country. So how bad is it for Europe? How bad is it specifically for Macron? And if the Global South community, the BRICS countries, the Russias, the South Africas, the Brazils, the Indias are continuing to rise and rise, and the United States is putting all its eggs in the European basket, maybe it's time for the United States to change its eggs, or at least a few of them, and take them out of that basket and start talking to the other countries. I think that's the future. I think the transformational moment for that came, as I told my friend Richard Wolff, when India told the United States, "You don't tell us who we can trade with." I think that was like the historians will look back in that look back at that moment and say, "Wow, that's when the world changed. That's when the new world order, if you will, kind of began, where these global South communities said, no, we got big boy pants too." So I think that's the takeaway here. The takeaway here is it might be smart for the United States to look at these European countries, like Trump kind of has, like NATO and the EU, and say, you guys are dying. You know, you guys aren't what you used to be. And I got some suitors over here who are actually in pretty good shape. So I might be paying more attention to them. In fact, that would be smart. That would be smart. So here's my interview with a European guy. I love doing this. I love bringing these interviews to you because I would never be able to do this if I was working at CNN or Fox or News Nation or any of those other stupid whatever, those places in the United States. So here's my interview with Xavier Morales, and I'll talk to you again when I get to Beijing and Shanghai. Very much looking forward to this. Going to be quite an event. And for me personally, I've never been to this part of the world. I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad I'm able to share the stories from this part of the world with you. It's unique, it's different. As an American journalist, basing myself here to get these stories, I'm only too happy to be able to share these stories with you, and I hope you're enjoying them. Pass them on, please, and give me a like and all that other jazz. See you next time.
Xavier Moreau is the founder and the director of the StratPol Center for Political Strategic Analysis, which makes him a really smart guy because that's a cool and complicated name for a company, so for an organization. How are you?
I'm fine, and
so
you?
Good to see you. You look fantastic.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and you have a little bit of that French accent, which everybody kind of loves.
I'm afraid by my English, but
Your English is beautiful. Your English is beautiful, and I'm so happy that you're here because there's so much to talk about, and I guess I would be remiss if I didn't start with your former country, France.
Not former.
Still consider yourself a Frenchman. Good, good. Your president seems to be having a lot of trouble these days, between his wife, the media all over the world. His numbers are down to 29%, and now the latest. I don't know if you heard me in my intro, but he's getting attacked by Italy.
Yeah, no, actually, you know, everything can be explained by the domestic policy of Emmanuel Macron because, as you said, he's in big troubles. Economical problems, security problem, and on the 8th of September, there will be a vote of confidence. And actually, nobody supports this vote of confidence. So Macron maybe will have to change again of prime minister. So everything is going
So
bad.
Wait, take me through that because I don't understand the parliamentary system, being American, of course. What happens with this vote of confidence? They ask the people what?
To support the policy of the prime minister.
Yeah, his party.
And the ultra-left with Mélenchon, the ultra-right with Marine Le Pen decided not to support the policy. So
what happens? Let's suppose he comes in at 5% support, 95% against him.
Everything is possible. Maybe he will have to organize a new parliamentary election. So at this time, there will be no majority. So it will be a very policy political catastrophe, and it would be worse that it will an economical collapse because till now all the rating agencies like Standard & Poor's, like Fitch
right.
and Moody's, they try not to to downgrade the rate of the French economy. The problem is everybody knows that we don't deserve our double A. So if we lose our double A, we will have to sell our obligation at 5.5%,
wow.
like England, and it will be a complete economic collapse.
Sounds like Japan in the 80s or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like England in the 70s.
Yeah.
So even now you have this ministry of the former prime minister, which is she's a woman. She's now minister of education. She said yesterday or 2 days ago, she said that maybe the IMF will be, we have to take control of
so
France.
It's that bad for Macron?
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
That's interesting. Nobody's ever explained it to me the way you have. I'm so happy you're explaining this for our viewers so they can understand. So first, a vote of no confidence. And if that vote of no confidence comes back very negatively for him, then he has to have elections to try and stay in office.
Maybe have elections. Maybe he have to find another prime minister, but nobody will support him as well. So it's
really that bad.
Yeah, it's really that bad. And again, the worst consequences will be economical consequences, because if we lose our AA, it's the end. Believe me, it's the end. Yeah, we will talk about that.
You're talking about Moody's.
Moody's, Standard & Poor's.
The way that they...
Yeah, yeah. If you look at how they rate the last months, one said, OK, we are not going to rate France. Because we don't want to repeat what happened with Lehman Brothers, you know. Lehman Brothers was AAA 48 hours before falling. So the idea for this rating agency is not to give a note to the French economics, because if the French economy collapse, it will be a complete collapse of the Eurozone. So that's what the kind of weight with on the Macron's shoulder.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I'm so glad you're explaining this to us. So... what's Marie Le Pen's position in all of this? How does she stand with the French people? And let me just add something to that. I'm an American. So the media that I digest in the United States is Marie Le Pen is crazy. She's right wing. She's like Hitler. She hates everybody, et cetera. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but actually not that much.
Not that much. you can hear the same in the leftist French media.
So yeah. So.
No, she's not.
Tell me how that's right or wrong.
If you look at the program, the political and economical program of Marine Le Pen, it's almost exactly the same as François Mitterrand in 1981.
Interesting.
So it's center left. Quite socialist oriented, and she's even not for remigration of the current migrants. She's okay for having some migrants. She gave everything the system wanted from her, so she's not dangerous anymore, and she's a perfect opponent for instance for Emmanuel Macron. Emmanuel Macron came, maybe you don't know, in 2017. He came through a coup d'état. A mediatic and juridical coup d'état, a legal coup d'état, because Israel is the real opponent was François Fillon. So they organized him to a big scandal just before the election. And so Emmanuel Macron got what he wanted, to have Marine Le Pen in front of him. And he repeated this operation during the last election in 2022 using the war in Ukraine. And he wanted to, and a success to do it, to present as the chief of war, the commander in chief of the French army. And he tried, what do we observe? No, he tried to repeat that. That's the reason why he's already talking about sending soldiers, sending weapons, sending planes. And even if I'm a former French officer, and those where I used to study in the military academy, those are generals. And I have some contact with my former friend. That we can even send 5,000 soldiers. Yeah. It's not possible. But we have no weapons, we have no soldiers, we have no ammunition. Everybody perfectly knows that. And I guess Emmanuel Macron knows that. Or maybe he lives in a parallel world with his courtisans.
Yeah.
But I think he knows that. He just tried to renew what his success to do in 2022, when you have the commander-in-chief of the French army. We will fight against Putin.
What do the French people think of that? Because I remember, and again, I'll make an American comparison. Like you talk about France, I talk about America. But I'm finding that there's some similarities. When our people were being pushed to buy some bullcrap story about how the Iraqis were going into Kuwait, taking babies out of incubators and then smashing their heads, and we all went, "Oh my God, these are horrible people. We have to go in there."
Weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction, and America kind of got behind it, and then we found out it was all bullcrap. Yeah. You know, we were lied to. Have the French people yet kind of diagnosed this whole Ukraine thing as being kind of maybe possibly bullcrap also?
Honestly, I think that most of the French people, they don't care about Ukraine, because we have so many domestic problems that they just want to fight to feed their children.
Yeah.
And we have a big problem with domestic security. So that's a big problem for French people. And concerning Ukraine, the problem is all the medias are for Zelensky, for Kiev. Zelensky is a hero. Putin is like Hitler. And so,
that's crazy.
You know, the atmosphere is pro-Kiev. But what's interesting, that people who are very interesting to know what happened in Ukraine, they are pro-Russian. And I know because it's my public. To be frank.
Yeah, but by the way, you're Putin's propagandist.
Yeah, of course I am.
Yeah.
I'm proud of it. I'm even the number one.
Yeah, I should share with.
I mean, in France,
I should share with my audience why I'm saying that. I'm laughing because you know we all get called that. All you have to do, all you've done is you've taken many of Putin's speeches and you've published them so people can hear what he has to say. And they're saying that you shouldn't do that. I mean, you're doing a service to people. By the way, you can hate Putin, you can like Putin, you can not care about Putin, but all you're doing is this is what the man says. Because in the West, they're not even allowed to hear him.
If you listen to what Putin said since his first interview was in 1991. It was still the Soviet Union. It just came to the to St. Petersburg. It was still Leningrad. In St. Petersburg, as a member of the local government, with the mayor Sobchak, and he gave his first interview. It was still the Soviet Union. In his first interview, he said, "Soviet Union, the Bolshevik placed a bomb under the state, the Russian state, the unitarian Russian state." And the second thing is, why they suppress the market? Why suppress the market? So actually, Putin was during the Soviet Union. He developed his own contrarian, you can say,
market thinking.
Contrarian thinking, politically thinking.
Oh, contrarian.
Contrarian.
Yes, okay. Yes.
During the Soviet Union, you know, it was not so so easy to do it. And after, and the good thing with Putin, if you follow what he said during the last 30 years. He just explained what he's going to do. When during his speech in Munich in 2007, he explained, you have to stop expanding NATO.
Yeah.
You have to stop organize a color revolution in Georgia, in Ukraine. Because if you don't stop, we will react.
See, but you're right. And I'm glad you said that. React to what the man says. Yeah. Look at his words. Look at his statements. Criticize it. Fine. Yeah. Find fault with it and then say, well, I disagree where he said this. I would be fine with that. I have no problems with people criticizing Trump or Putin or Xi or Modi or anybody, Macron or anybody. The problem is when it comes to people like Xi and Putin and a few others, they don't attempt to do a critical analysis. They just destroy with labels. And that's just
they
you know.
Even they even know listening to him,
right?
You know, for instance, this this speech in Munich in 2007. It's 1 year before the operation in Georgia, and we know that you know, Dick Cheney gave the green light to Saakashvili to start his ethnic cleansing operation in South Ossetia.
Right.
And what did Russia? Russia intervened. Putin told them a year ago, stop doing that. Mm-hmm. So. Georgia was a bad experience for the US, for NATO. And so you can think that, okay, it's over, they won't repeat it. But they repeated it. Mm. They do it. They did Maidan. With Maidan, they lost Crimea. They didn't implement the Minsk agreement. Mm. Because of that, they lost Donbass. They didn't allow Zelensky to sign the agreement in April 2022. So they lost Kherson in Zaporozhye.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they don't sign know what Putin asked them to sign...
Goodbye,
they
Odessa. Will...
Exactly. But yeah. I think Trump understood that. Because if you...
I do too.
Did you see the card he showed to the during the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
He showed the potential region. But in Odessa, nothing was. So I think Trump understand. And that the most important city, place in Ukraine now, it's Odessa. And was very interesting, you have a statement in, it was in the Telegraph, an English journalist, it was the title, Ukraine can live without Donbass, but not without Odessa. Odessa is the best port with Sebastopol, but it's already lost, in Black Sea. Odessa is important.
That's a beautiful city.
It's a corridor for all the East Europe, especially for Poland, for instance. So.
What you're saying is he's going to force the Russians to take it.
Yeah.
They're going to end up taking more than they want.
If they are not agreeing now with what Putin is proposing, which is quite fair, they will lose everything.
Right.
But Trump understood that. But
he's actually saying he wants Crimea back, Zelensky. I mean, it's kind of an irrational argument. Speaking of Zelensky, I got to ask you about what you think of Orban. Big story in the news in the last 48 hours, as you know, where Zelensky has taken it upon himself to blow up the Prusdub pipeline that goes from Russia to Hungary all the way to Croatia, etc. And he blew it up, and Orban is really angry about this. And today, he said he's going to sue the EU because of it.
Actually, today, the European Commission said that the Ukrainian army had to stop shelling the pipe. And it's a big mistake from Zelensky, and it shows that he doesn't know what to do. Because actually, he gets the oil, the Russian oil going through the pipe,
right,
is used in the Hungarian and Slovakian refinery to make diesel.
Right.
And this diesel is sent to Ukraine.
Oh, really?
So he destroyed
his own diesel.
And it's exactly the same.
I didn't know. So wait, it goes from Russia through that pipeline. It gets to Slovakia and Hungary. They essentially put it through the process of turning it into diesel, and they send it to Ukraine. So
it's the same with Indian diesel.
Wow.
India, in July, is now the first exporters of diesel for Ukraine. And at the same time, Zelensky asked Trump to put secondary sanctions against India because they buy Russian oil. Exactly the same happened in January 2005. He decided to shut the pipe for the Russian gas through Ukraine. So thanks to that, Russia said, okay, we don't need any more the gas infrastructure in Ukraine. They destroy everything. They use the pipe during the offensive to free the Kursk region. You know, remember that. And at least what happened now, Kiev is buying Russian gas through Slovakia, through Turkey Stream. And so till January 2025, Ukraine get money for the transit of the gas. So there are no more money for transit from the Russian gas. And now they pay the gas with a transit from Turkey Stream through Slovakia, through Ukraine.
So, well, the way you just described it, it sounds like either A, he's stupid and just does not understand that he's hurting himself and his own people, or B, he's spiteful. And it doesn't matter. He just wants to destroy anything that has an R in front of it.
I was listening to you. You were talking about Netanyahu. There is a common point between Netanyahu and Zelensky. Uh-huh. If there is a truce of or an agreement, there will be elections. There will be a court. Zelensky will have to flee or he will finish in jail.
So will Netanyahu.
He doesn't want neither a truce, neither a peace process.
Because what you're saying is if they come up with a peace process, then he will have to...
Have elections.
And you don't think he could win?
Impossible.
Impossible.
That's the reason why the English government is preparing Zaluzhny, which is now ambassador in Ukrainian ambassador in London.
Yeah.
They want, in my opinion, they want to make Zelensky sign, and as soon as he sign, he's in danger. Well, politically, he's dead, and physically, he's in danger. There is a statement in the Times. It was 3 days ago, and one of the Banderist leader said, if Zelensky agreed with Putin claims, he will be dead politically and even physically.
Well, a lot of people say that from the very beginning, Zelensky would have been a different person if the corrupt oligarchs and the nationalists hadn't literally gotten in his head and said, if you make peace with Russia, we're going to literally kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've seen reports about this. And talk to people who've told me there's no question that those people are the people who are running the government in Ukraine. Is that true?
I think it's true. The problem for Ukraine, who financed Maidan? We know there is US aid. Even Victoria Nuland said that openly. But the oligarch finance as well. For instance, Akhmetov, which is the used to be the richest oligarch, was controlling Mariupol. And he paid the Banderist Battalion, the Nationalist Battalion, to keep the city in his hands. Wow. Maidan is a golden age for oligarchs. Kolomoisky started to be governor.
In 2014.
In 2014, governor in Dniepropetrovsk. All these oligarchs, they got the power through Maidan. It was not a fight against corruption. It was, on the contrary, an organization of the corruption. And they had the Democrat Party in the US use Ukraine for cleaning the money, for getting money. And weeks after Maidan, the son of Joe Biden, he was at this time vice president, Hunter Biden, joined Burisma company. We had a big problem with the English court. And after that, all the problem was solved. The English court freed, I don't know, it was $30 million were blocked. And Joe Biden came in 2016 or 15, I don't remember, to get the prosecutor, the general prosecutor, Shokin, fired from his post. Because Shokin started to investigate in the Burisma company. So actually, Maidan didn't solve the there is a really big problem of corruption in Ukraine. On the contrary, Maidan internationalized this corruption.
If you
look at what happened with the NABU, not some weeks ago, with the demonstration. Actually, NABU was created by the Democrat Party for Ukraine.
They made it global, is what they did.
Yeah.
They made it global,
that's right.
They globalized the corruption that was taking place in Ukraine. One of the things that I'm bothered by, though, is, I mean, these European countries, this guy Starmer and Merz and Delayan and from the EU and Macron and these guys, what you just said a little while ago, Russia is obviously winning this war. And if there's no peace deal, they've got nothing else to do, but they have to keep going because you're in a war. The other side is not stopping. It's like if you and I are playing tennis and I'm winning by, I don't know how many sets, or you're probably beating me. You look like you're a better tennis player than me. But after a while, I could either say, okay, let's just stop and I concede you won. It's over. Or, no, I'm going to stay here till midnight and keep playing.
You know,
I mean, if you keep playing, you're going to keep beating me.
It's a magical thinking. I can't compare. I'm not comparing National Socialism of Hitler with what happens now in the okay? But the behavior when you lose the war. And so you start to hope and to believe that some miracle will happen.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the Europeans.
It's the same.
Why would they do that?
Because Napoleon III lost the power? Because he lost the war. Why the Wilhelm II lost the power in 1918? Because he lost the war. And Nicholas II was about to lose the war, so he lost the power. It's always the same. So the European Union was so implicated in this war, supporting Ukraine, that the defeat, the Ukraine defeat, will be the European Union defeat.
Ukraine loses, they lose.
Yeah, yeah.
You really think so?
I think so.
You think if tomorrow Ukraine, like if these guys went to, when they were talking to Trump last week, and I was watching them, and they were kind of agreeing with Trump, but then as soon as the meeting was over, they went back to their little hideouts, and they started saying, no, I'm sorry, but I don't think we can agree with that. And then they started creating all these conditions, like they're going to have peacekeepers there, and it's like, why would Russia agree to have French people, German people, and British people who are the reason the war started in the first place going back into the country to do exactly what Putin said he didn't want?
Can you imagine? They ask for a truce, an immediate truce without any...
no conditions.
And they promise we are going to build a very strong Ukrainian army to hold against Russia. So,
That's exactly.
They don't know what they say because they are in panic.
But you're absolutely right. Your point is such a good one. I mean, think about what you're saying. Russia is destroying the Ukrainian military right now. That's just it is. And I feel bad for Ukraine, and I feel bad for the Ukrainian people.
I even feel
bad for those soldiers because they're just defending their country.
Right? That's the same.
But they're being destroyed, no question about it. And yet, as this continues, we have the Europeans sitting there looking at this and saying, no, we want this to continue no matter what. It just doesn't make any damn sense.
And Rheinmetall promised to build a plant in Ukraine producing ammunitions. So you have two choices. You know?
The very thing that Mr. Putin and the Russians said was the reason they went into Ukraine, because there was military hardware, militarization, control by the Europeans, and they needed that to stop.
Yeah,
now the Europeans are saying we'll stop the war if we can do all that again.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're losing.
They're losing. And actually, I would like to underline the fact that they were killing Russian people in Ukraine. I started traveling in Donbass since 2015.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I saw the school, I saw the hospital. They were not at all a target, military target. They were shelled. And just look at the report of the OSCE, the organization we are supposed to control the Minsk agreement. And on the 15th of February 2022, yeah. Ukraine army started to shell, to prepare its offensive, shelling all the front line. So the Russians, they come to avoid the ethnic cleansing of the Russians living in Donbass. Because in Donbass, this is Russian living. It's the same in Odessa, it's the same. There's Russian city, it's Russian territory. Okay, Lvov, Rovno.
They watch Masha and the Bear.
Yeah. Like, you're perfectly right.
If they want to be Russian or they whatever. And the Russians were perfectly fine with that being a neutral country and having Russian people living there. It's when the West came in and said, it can't be a neutral country. It has to be an anti-Russia country. Exactly. And that's when the Russians went in, by the way. I'm still curious, though, about Europe, because you're a European, and I want to better understand that. And I want to understand why the people of Europe, I mean, the British are brilliant, smart people. The French are, my God, their experiences, their history. They're smart people. They're logical. I would say the same thing about the Germans. Why are they sitting there watching these doofuses make decisions that are destroying their countries? Inflation is high. Wages are low. Taxes are high. Why do they just take it?
First, I think that the French leaders are not so clever. We used to have a very clever elite in France.
De Gaulle.
It's no more. If you look at the last, for instance, Minister of Foreign Affairs, so State Secretary, it's very poor, intellectually poor people, not competent, no experience, fanatics. And so when I used to work on the archives of the foreign in foreign affairs for my doctorate and in the Russian archives. When I look at the analytics, I look at the message we were sent by the Soviet Union diplomacy. Yeah. It's you understand that people are competent, people are well educated.
So
it's
so
over
let's
now.
Go through that. Mitterrand, Sarkozy.
Mitterrand was old school. It was okay, but it was on the wrong way. But he was old school. He was still from a generation with clever people, with well educated people.
What about Sarkozy?
Sarkozy, it started to be. Poor, but he has a good instinct. For instance, with Russia, he made a very good job.
So, how does Macron compare to those two, for example?
The worst. Hollande was very bad, and Macron is at the same level.
Is he just not smart? Was he just put there? I've read, and just watching Candace Owens's report, whether you believe the stuff about the wife or not, the sense I get is that he was chosen by very powerful people, placed there because he looked like a model and he was pretty.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And if you look at the European elites, it's always the same. Beautiful guy or woman, Sandra Marian, for instance. Yeah, she's very, very beautiful. Usually speaking good English.
Yeah.
Better than mine. Suborned to the
globalist elites. Exactly.
So, and of course, I think you underline something very important, in my opinion. And when I listen to the Russian expert, where they are very interesting in what happened with Brigitte Macron, it's the way Macron was choice. They don't care if Brigitte is Jean-Michel or not. The most important in who is in charge.
Huh.
Who
they don't care.
Decided? Yeah. That, for instance, the Russians, they want to understand that they don't care about Brigitte Macron. They want to understand how is it possible that a guy Nobody knew him 2 years before.
Macron.
Start being a president. Organize a campaign, as I told you, a mediatical legal campaign against his main opponent, François Fillon. And everybody was sure François Fillon is going to win. So. And the very top, you know, actually, Macron is president till 2027. I would like to know who will be chosen.
Will he make it?
I'm not sure.
Is there something within the system in France where they can take him out?
No, it's very complicated. Hard. And maybe he can leave it himself. Because actually...
29% and going down.
Yeah. Actually, it's not the only one. Look at Starmer in England. And Merz is
fascinating. Putin's at 85%. Yeah. And that is a German polling company, Statista.
Yeah.
So the Germans hate Putin. Yeah. So it's probably higher. I'm kidding. Xi is somewhere around 78, 79. Modi is somewhere in the... And yet all the guys from the West, I mean, Trump is somewhere around 40-something right now. Biden was around 30-something. I mean, look at the difference. These are supposed to be the countries that are not democracies.
Look at all the figures from the Levada Center. Levada Center is, in Russia, it's a foreign agent because it's financed by foreign money. And so, all the figures they show confirm that Putin is very popular, that the Russians are satisfied by the way they live, the way Putin leads the war.
And he's not perfect. You could go to a bar here down the street and you'll have people saying horrible things about him, too, just like you wouldn't in any other country. But he's generally, people will say, you know what, I'll take what I got. Yeah. You know, it's certainly better than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, of course.
And he's brought the country back from that. And I think that's what people appreciate about the guy.
Landed in Russia on the 26th of March, 2000. When Putin, the same day Putin was elected president, and so I saw the difference. I saw how Russia changed, and of course I'm not the only one. All the guys 50 years old, they know from where Putin took Russia and how Russia is strong. Now, when I landed in Moscow 25 years ago, I was a little bit ashamed for Russian because coming from Paris, they
slice your throat for a nickel.
Yeah.
I mean, it was high crime.
It was not in Moscow, it was more, but actually it was poor.
It was a bad time. It's okay.
When I land in Paris, I have the same impression.
But here's the thing. Exactly. You just took me where I wanted to go. The things that I just described about Moscow in the 90s, unfortunately, and I hate to say this, but that's the picture that's being drawn for me as a journalist when I talk to people who are living in places like Berlin outside of Paris and outside of London. That's crazy how, things have changed that way. So, listen, we're out of time. What a great conversation. And by the way, your English is fine.
Thank you.
You speak good English, as we say. Your English is good looking.
So I'll be back.
Yes. If you invite me. Good to see you. You're a good guy. Thank you so much for spending some time with us and sharing so much of your wisdom with us. You could stay seated. We're going to just say goodbye, and then you and I can keep talking. That's it for us. Thank you so much for being with us. By the way, check out my podcast. It's exploding lately. I don't know what the heck is going on. The numbers are unbelievable. Thank you for watching. So we're going to take some of the clips that you and I just had, and I'm going to put it on my podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking. If you want to watch, have at it. Also, a lot of great conversations in the last 48 hours on X or Twitter. Back and forth. I'm so glad that we're able to converse. So if you want to make your point about some of the things maybe even that we talked about, go to Twitter or go to X and join our conversation. Thanks so much for being with us. I'll be looking for you next time. Adios. Au revoir.